With Mother's Day around the corner, are you thinking about a truly special gift for your mom or a maternal figure in your life? Let me tell you about MyLifeInABook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Pretty cool, right? Here's how it works. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions you want to ask. Then she can either type up her response or record her voice. And MyLifeInABook.com compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It's like preserving her voice and her stories for eternity. This book becomes a legacy, something you and future generations can treasure forever. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is your chance to give her a way to share them. I want to know about the stories of how my mom and dad grew up. What's the first thing they remember after they were born? That's one of the questions I sent to my dad after signing up for My Life in a Book. And I can't think of a greater gift to give my dad in sharing his stories and to receive. It's super easy to use. My favorite part of it, as someone who sometimes lives on turtle time and forgets about sending or receiving email, is that they reach out a couple days prior to sending questions, just so I know of what questions they're going to send to my dad, if I want to change it for another question or customize it with something that I want to know. It's that kind of specificity and care that I love so much. This is genuinely an incredible, incredible gift. There's no greater present than I could give a family member or a loved one than to participate in this kind of meaningful appreciation for the entirety of their lives, separate from my own. Check out MyLifeInABook.com and use code AndysGirls at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom or loved one this Mother's Day. That's MyLifeInABook.com. with code AndysGirls for 10% off today. And thank the Jills Aaron and your life and mine. In the words of Meredith Marks, when it comes to that week and a half before my period, I wish I was disengaging. My PMS is off the charts. Truly Uber Eats needs to check in and say, it's about that time, isn't it? I know it is. The cravings are crazy. I want to crawl out of my skin. Now it's easier to manage PMS with Estro Control. Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony and Estro Control, is dedicated to making women's lives easier. And that means using only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work for women. They make no compromise when it comes to quality, and it shows. For AGs who are friends of perimenopause, menopause, or postmenopause, Happy Mammoth has Hormone Harmony. It's not just a supplement for women going through those stages. It's also become a phenomenon. Women can't stop talking about it on social media. A bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code AndysGirls at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code AndysGirls for 15% off today. I'm engaging.
There aren't any skeletons in my closet, but there may be some ghosts. Doesn't make sense.
Hot girl summer may be over, but I stay sweaty 365 days a year.
What is happening? I love Hot Girl Summer. I love that my tagline did not make sense. There we go. Literally while saying it out loud, I was like, this is a moment. This is a thing that's happening. But you guys, it's Andy's Girls. It's, I think, I just realized this. Of course, I planned it. I planned it out. This special celebration, words are hard, celebratory celebration, fun fusion episode. Episode 250 of Andy's Girls.
studio audience goes wild.
Yes, we're both applauding, but you can't hear it. That is a bit. I just realized that while I was saying it out loud, that the number that follows 249 is 250. That is a big deal, right? Is that a big deal? Yeah. I feel like that's a big deal.
Definitely.
That's definitely a big deal. Wow. What do I get for the 250th anniversary? I'm just going to Google right quick what the 25th anniversary symbol is.
I feel like it's gold.
You know how they do that?
No, it's silver. Silver.
No. Can we pretend it's gold?
Gold is 50.
Oh my God. I don't even. Ew, it's silver. I don't know. I mean, I do like a metallic, but I don't enjoy silver. I'm not a silver. I don't know what's better, silver or white gold. I'm really a neither.
Let's think. Like white gold is right? like fancier, but I sort of feel like why are you paying for white gold when it looks the same as silver?
Amen. And also, you know what I just realized? Of course today is a metallic and it's silver. Because you know what I think of when I think of silver? Sparkle. You know what else a sparkle reminds me of? Ice. You know what else an icicle reminds me of is, oh my God, Salt Lake City. Maybe this was all destined. Maybe this is what people talk about when they talk about destiny, which I've never believed in aside from a certain cast member on Shaw's until this moment. Maybe it was all meant to, the timing aligned for Salt Lake City to return in time for the 250th episode of Andy's Girls. And I am so excited to have one of my favorite people, a spiritual OG of the AG at this point. You know him as the content manager of pop culture at Betches Media, host of the Pop Alarm podcast, and mention it all, creator of the iconic Bravo by Betches, and someone who, guys, I'm truly not fucking around when I say I did think to myself, who do I want to talk about the Salt Lake City premiere with? And I'm not joking. I did not set a backup plan because there is only one person whose energy I wanted on the spiritual Zoom people's couch. It's none other than His Holiness Dylan Hafer. Dylan, how are you?
I am great, Sarah. Thank you so much for inviting me. And you know, it's okay that you didn't have a backup plan, because if I had said no, if I wasn't feeling generous with my time, you could have just pulled a Mary Cosby and talked to yourself.
Oh my God. You know, talking to myself is one of my favorite things to do. And we were talking about interior design before starting recording. More to come on that note, guys. I'm freaking out about what's about to happen. But I do now have a clawfist. So I could have spoken to myself inside of my clawfist for up to 50.
You need to get some like styrofoam wig heads and just start speaking to them. Because, you know, Mary talks to the mannequins. And I think that's beautiful.
I do think that's a beautiful journey
also,
for her. Tell me.
Maybe Mary should start recording her podcast in the closet, because, you know, that would kind of give it a nice little ambiance, like surrounded by all those things. And I feel like rather than focusing on, you know, Jesus or whatever was happening in that podcast episode, it would be really funny to just listen to her constantly be distracted by like, what's that Chanel necklace? I haven't seen that in a minute. Look, I found the bag. Like, I would rather just see her, like, get excited about things in her closet than, like, speak more about the Lord.
I do have to say, blessed be the pod title or something. Is the name of her podcast, This Is Mary's Podcast? What was the line that she said?
Welcome to Mary's Podcast. But I will say, I just, from doing a cursory look around the internet, it does not appear that this podcast exists in any findable format.
Look it up. Yeah, tell me.
Well, I looked because I watched, was fortunate enough to receive a screener of the episode. So I've seen it now three times, once like 3 weeks ago, once last week, and once last night. So I feel like I'm well versed in this premiere. And I looked it up last week. The podcast was not on any platforms. And I saw a couple people like tweeting today that Mary's podcast is not findable online. So I don't, You know, I was wondering if maybe she would like drop it the night of the premiere or something, but it doesn't appear that that happened. Also, she recorded this like 6 months ago. So it's a little bit like, you know, it's giving very much Monique's Not For Lazy Moms podcast, except for like with that, at least it existed. It just wasn't necessarily like happening regularly.
Yeah, I wonder if it's some sort of godforsaken, maybe wrong use of the word in this context, but like subscription thing for her
God endorsed subscription thing.
Right? Where she's like, you guys are going to listen to this and it's going to cost you $1 million because I need a new house.
Oh, what if there's like, is there like a Christian version of Patreon that's called like
Christian?
Disciple.com and you like pay to.
I mean, if there is, I'm open. Listen,
right, like you gotta pay some bills. You could start recording like evangelical bonus episodes.
Would love to do it. Honestly, blessed be the whatever, Amex, Visa, MasterCard, credit debt, whatever, however you want to pay to pray with me. Let's pray together. Like, honestly, like, let's make.
Blessed be Brooks braiding the challah.
Bless me. Okay, wait.
Dad.
There is.
Dad, literally, do you know how to braid it?
So much. There is literally so much that I want to talk to you about. We've talked about this offline. I watched the premiere a couple episodes. I actually reached out to Meredith Marks because I was like, thank you on behalf of all Jews for the Shabbat moment and also about some other stuff. And she hadn't seen the premiere at that point. And I was like, well, I assume this, what I watched will be somewhere in line with what is going to be in the first episode. But I do have to say that nothing made my heart go pitter patter than seeing a unique Jewish experience not be shat on. I felt like, yeah, this is in like saying certain prayers your parents are going to forget. They're going to ask a child to start them so that we can all catch up. Like, we're very much, I don't know what, I mean, we're very much like social Jews.
Right.
That's the whole thing. So with being like a Reform Jew, or, you know, everyone's Jewish identity is different, but I very much vibe. I mean, we never made challah. Are you kidding? But I very much vibe with the whole, like, we forget what we're doing, but this is about being together, and it done in a way that wasn't making fun of being Jewish.
Right. It's not about like properly reciting the prayer. It's about like getting the people you care about together and doing something nice. And I thought it was, you know, nice to include the Barlow family because obviously they have that, you know, Jewish heritage also. And I thought they did an excellent job of weaving in the drama at the Shabbat dinner in a way that didn't feel disrespectful. And then you think back to our Shabbat on Real Housewives of New York, and it's like, oh, so you can have, you can use a Shabbat dinner as like a plot device in a way that doesn't feel like extremely offensive. That's good to know.
I mean, it is one of those things. I wasn't expecting it. And when I watched the premiere, I just felt so much. I felt like Bravo doesn't deserve to be commended for showing this on the heels of what they haven't said about the Black Shabbat episode of New York. But if I put that aside, it's hard because it's like, I want to be like, thank you for showing the Jewish identity in such a way. But because literally there has been not a single acknowledgement of Ramona's behavior at Black Shabbat, it means less to me in terms of like from a network perspective, because they so obviously don't care about us when we're upset or feel horrified or offended by what happened. But on a separate note, I do think the ways that Meredith and her family conducted themselves and Lisa and her family conducted themselves and the way that it was edited was genuinely delightful for me as a Jew to watch and as a content creator to want to discuss.
Yeah, I saw someone, this going like off topic a little bit, I guess, but I saw someone
go for it
make the comparison of, you know, on last season of Atlanta when they had the Halloween party and Kenya wore the, you know, Native American headdress that a lot of people took issue with. And very quickly she, you know, like the next day she posted an apology. Bravo, I think, spoke out, you know, posted one of their, you know, white text on the black background situations that we've, you know, become accustomed to selectively. And that it was, it's interesting that when that happened, clearly somebody was like, okay, we need to say something. Kenya needs to say something. But like, I think a lot of people were offended by Ramona, you know, on multiple sides this whole season. And Bravo clearly isn't like banging down her door to have her post a social media apology. They don't feel like they need to acknowledge it. And it's like, I mean, I think it's good that Kenya apologized. I think it's good that Bravo acknowledged it. But it's like, why are we applying this, you know, why are we applying this kind of like sensibility so selectively? And, you know, it doesn't seem great. It's not a great look to me that it's like, you know, this Black woman was told to apologize right away, basically. And like, Ramona did 45 things this season that would have been worthy of an apology. And it doesn't seem like anyone is like sliding into her DMs to say like, hey, can you acknowledge this at least? Like, it's not happening.
Yeah. And I feel like the difference is Kenya's use of cultural appropriation. People found offensive and she took responsibility for it, I think, nearly immediately. The network responded, I think, in a comment on another, on an account, that they were apologetic. They had some sort of sorry, not sorry comment where they were like halfway taking responsibility, which they then were able to twist online into saying they put out a statement, which I don't believe they ever did. I think that what they did was reply to another account's comment. But regardless, it was a lot more than the zero that they've given toward Ramona's disgusting behavior on Black Shabbat. Also noting that the whole thing with Black Shabbat, the way it was edited, the way it was pushed out, was that her behavior was the entertainment piece of the plot. Kenya's cultural appropriative, I use the word costume in quotes because it's right. Not the whole point is that this a person's culture is not a costume. So I give side eye to the use of that word.
Right, she wore it as a costume.
That wasn't the point of the episode. The network like quadruple down on Ramona's behavior. They set it up in such a way as mm-hmm. to ensure that she would behave that way. That's also why she was present at that Fortune Society lunch. They wanted to make sure she was there because they understand and are doubling down on her ignorance. And it's like, how would they even apologize when it seems like her misbehavior is an investment on their part?
I forgot they also, in, like, the never-before-seen episode or, like, some re-airing, literally they blurred out Kenya's costume
They re-edited it.
There were certain shots that they cut, and then there were certain times when she was, like, arguing with Portia or whoever, and literally it was, like, you couldn't see Kenya because they just made her blurry. And it's, like, we've never gotten that same energy with, like, Luann's blackface costume. Like, that's, like, the classic example where it's, like, I don't think the network has ever said anything. I don't think Luann has ever admitted that anything was wrong with that. And it's like, let's get back to Salt Lake, because honestly, I'm like,
yeah, it's a lot. It's just like, it shows the best and worst that comes of, I don't know, a recognition or respect toward a different person's religion or culture or identity. And I just was really appreciative that we got to see this moment with Meredith, who's coming out of a very, very difficult time for her family with her father's passing and the reckoning of his existence prior to that. And she's doing it in such a way where she's paying respect to him while also reflecting her Jewish identity. And then you have somebody else there with their family who grew up Jewish and converted. I mean, there are three people, I want to say, on Salt Lake City who've converted, right? There's Lisa.
Jen. Who and else? Jenny.
Jen and Jenny, right.
So and then Whitney left the Mormon church also. Right. So it's like there's a lot of... Exactly. And, you know, Heather has a really complex relationship with the Mormon mm-hmm. church. I think the whole cast is really, you know, there's a lot of different backgrounds, both, you know, religious backgrounds, racial backgrounds, you know, like cultural, you know, there's just a lot of different stuff happening. And I think, you know, however Jenny turns out to be as a housewife, we'll see. I think it's way too soon to like you know, kind of analyze her. But, I mean, she has a background that is, like, very unique from what we have usually seen on Bravo shows. So I think just, like, the fact that in her first scene, they really, like, you know, gave time to her explaining her experience and kind of breaking down the whole story of her life, I think right off the bat, I'm like, okay, like, I want to know more about this person, and I'm glad that they have, you know, cast somebody with this background, because, you know, we don't see a lot of, like, refugee housewives. Like, it's not something that is, you know, happening on every show.
Yeah, it's so interesting when you think about the idea that after the Salt Lake City announcement, some people, myself included, were like, great, another cast of sort of knockoff, not like knockoff Beverly Hills-ish, but like this kind of like very elitist, very white. I was thinking it was going to be like blonde. I mean, no disrespect to the blondes, but like a very, it was going to be like a very blonde or spiritually blonde experience of a certain kind of woman times six in a certain kind of community. And to look at Salt Lake City and see how fucking diverse it is. And also diversity in all ways, including in the ways that some of these women communicate with each other. They're so diametrically opposite that it's just so fascinating. But it's also a thrill because you really don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah. And I think they've done a good job casting this show that it's like, it may not be necessarily like proportionally representative of what Salt Lake City is like. But the thing that matters the most is finding a cast that is going to have, you know, layered, interesting, complex dynamics with each other and is going to give us an entertaining show. And so I feel like it's always like a little bit of a, you know, it's a tricky game that it's like you want the cast to like feel like they're representative of the place they're from, but also like that's not actually the thing that matters the most. And I think with some shows, it's like with like New York, it feels like they're stuck to this idea of like the Upper East Side women. And it's like, first of all, that's not real. Like nobody, that's not like a real thing in New York that much. And also it's like, it's hindering you. Whereas in Salt Lake, it feels like they've really taken the liberties to kind of like find interesting people and like create an exciting cast. And like, especially going into the second season, I feel like there's so many different like interpersonal dynamics to explore within this group. And even in the premiere, we get, you know, Meredith and Lisa, and, you know, Lisa's friendship with Jen is causing issues with Meredith, and Meredith is, you know, becoming better friends with Whitney and Heather and Mary. And Mary is like such a wild card. And last season, because of Mary's like casting status, I don't know, we didn't really see her like in the mix with the group that much, but it seems like this year we're going to, and I'm really excited for that. Like, there are just a lot of different kind of avenues happening. And I think that is like the number one thing that a Housewives show needs to be, you know, to sustain excitement, is like you have to have different angles.
Yeah. And I think that what got so many of us in a tizzy, obviously, was Jen's shocking arrest as it happened in real time, and all of us freaking out and realizing then that it was elements of the aftermath 12 minutes later, you know, after she left, the aftermath of the police, FBI, helicopters, people showing up and knowing that those elements were going to be caught on camera were insane, because now we've reached this new chapter of Housewives history where, like, yeah, you might be charged with a felony, and also your husband has maybe stolen $101 million from like burn victims. And so the stakes in real time are national news and could not be higher when it comes to, you know, Erica hasn't been charged with anything, but obviously the stakes involved with this and the new $25 million bankruptcy suit and everything could not be higher. And on Salt Lake City, you have Jen, who's facing significant jail time for whatever has taken place with her quote unquote company. But you also have genuinely significant stakes in the friendships that are taking place, and some of which are falling apart. Like Beverly Hills, you have that with I guess you could say like Crystal and Sutton, although Crystal's a new housewife and Sutton is a new full-time housewife. So while you feel the stakes, we aren't as invested versus, I mean, it's like great, but you know, this isn't, yeah. That's not like the center diamond, shall we say, of conflict versus Salt Lake City, where there are genuine stakes involved. Meredith and Lisa have been very good friends for much longer than this show in its second season has taken place. You look at Heather and Jen, Whitney's there. So there's like some Whitney Jen stuff, I guess. Mary's also, thank God, left her closet and in the space and taking part in all of this. There are real relationship conflicts that are taking place. Plus, we know the Jen stuff is looming. I mean, there's a lot to unpack.
I think this premiere really, it was like reassuring to me, because when there's a season where something so massive happens while they're filming, of course you're excited to see that on camera. You're excited to see how that plays out. And like the first couple minutes of this premiere, which they released early last week, obviously are like so explosive, so, you know, mind-blowing, duh, all of that. Yes, I can't wait to see like how that plays out in context in the season. But to then go back 2 months, the whole rest of the premiere, I was like, okay, like we've got a season. Like this cast has, they are gonna bring it. Even before, I mean, the rest of them don't know that this Jen stuff is on the horizon. So, like, right. It's always interesting to think about the kind of, like, dramatic irony of, you know, these women are just going about their business, like, filming season 2 of their, you know, hit reality show. And it seems like, right off the bat, everybody is, like, really down to bring it this season. And I am just so thankful, because you never quite know. You're, like, when there's such a newsworthy event, it's like, okay, is the rest of the season just going to kind of feel like filler? And I don't think that's going to be the case. And I'm relieved, because I don't think I feel like I heard someone say that it's probably going to be around like episode 9-ish.
5? Oh, just kidding.
It's 2 months into filming. So really, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
So I think there's a lot of, you know, good stuff to dig into before that happens. And I'm excited, because I think sometimes the biggest scandal is really exciting, but like you can get a lot more sort of interesting content out of just like the everyday back and forth.
I completely agree, which I think is what is going to make this season so special. And I also have to say, you know, that a lot of people were curious about how Heather may change. There's this whole thing of the second season curse, and especially when it's a new franchise, which we haven't experienced in a while, but a new housewife comes in and they get so much public affection. How does that potentially change their behavior on Housewives when you know in your back pocket, well, a lot of people have my back? And I thought that would maybe be my focus when I first watched the premiere. But what I actually found my, and as I rewatched this morning, I was like, you know what's actually so interesting to me is not necessarily the performative aspect for these women now knowing they're on a hit show, as you said. What's so interesting to me is the performance of Jen Shaw, the performative nature of us now knowing she knew that the feds were, this whole federal investigation has been going on for, I think, as long as a decade, if I'm not incorrect, and I could be totally wrong. Do you know how long it's been going on It's a long time.
I think like 2013, maybe, like several years.
Okay.
And there,
Yeah.
Well, and I think the most kind of, you know, the biggest red flag, I would think, from her perspective is that other people that were involved, maybe not directly with her, but that were involved in the same larger scheme have already been convicted of stuff. So it's like, even if she didn't know necessarily, like, the feds are now gonna arrest me any day, she knew that, like, she had to know that the whole situation wasn't, like, airtight. Like, that people were facing consequences, and that clearly, like, you would think you would think she would see that it's like, okay, if six other people that I sort of worked with have all been charged with stuff, like, chances are they're going to get to me sooner or later. And, you know, the buck is going to stop somewhere. But yeah, I mean, like, seeing her give Lisa the tour of Sha Chalet 2.0, it's, and she's talking about, like, you know, they had never seen so many bags and clothes and shoes, and, like, it was the hardest move they've ever done, which, first of all, I feel like that's not, like, to me, that's, like, not a flex. It's, like, if I knew, if I hired a moving company, and I knew that it was the worst move they had ever done, I would feel bad.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be like, they had so much stuff to carry. They were like literally dying. Like, that's embarrassing. Get a U-Haul. Do some of it yourself. Spare those people.
I mean, also as someone who literally doesn't have a savings account, but has a whole fucking lot of shoes, I would look at that stuff. If I was Jen, who literally had an assistant start a GoFundMe to pledge $250 a person to help her pay for her legal costs, seeing what she has in her closet, I mean, I get why she, I guess, wouldn't have cash laying around since it wasn't hers and she wanted to, like, spend that shit as quickly as possible. But I wouldn't feel great knowing that. I mean, I've always made the joke that I'll, like, be the woman, young woman, living in her shoes. And if I was Jen showing off that closet, being like, isn't it great how much stuff I have? Now knowing how many, at least hundreds of thousands, many hundreds of thousands of dollars I have to have to have in legal costs, in my legal strategy. Like, usually rich people, or rather wealthy people, have some fucking art. Like, you don't even, it's like a car's resale value. As much as I love my dresses and shoes, it's not like this is a genuine investment so that I can even make back the money I spent.
Right. It's like you could sell it on, you know, Vestiaire, like Erica, you know, like Erica.
Yeah.
You know, and you could make,
until she
you
wasn't
could make,
allowed to.
You could make back a little bit of money, but you're making back money to spend on, like, a different pair of shoes. You're not making money to, like,
amen.
That's not like a lifeboat to get you out of debt. And, you know, you can tell, like, the way that Erica and Tom lived, like, he was stealing money for them to be rich. Whereas I feel like Jen was stealing money so she could have the appearance of being rich. Because, I mean, like, at the end of the day, it's like the home is rented. It doesn't seem like they have any kind of, you know, obviously she has a nice car, you know, they're
probably leased.
They're probably living comfortably, but it's like, it literally feels like she is stealing this money to spend on, like, a Fendi puffer coat and a pair of Louboutins. And it's like, that's not actually, like, you know, you have luxurious things, but it doesn't seem like she's really living, like, the full true life of luxury that you might think somebody with that, like, type of situation going on would be living. Like, she doesn't have $1 million bank account. She's not vacationing in the Alps. Like, it's like people who are really, like, have that kind of wealth, they have a lot more than just, like, a bunch of handbags. That's not, like, that's not what really rich people, I mean, it's like, I have, like, I buy a bag and that's, like, my big purchase. But, like, if you're actually rich, then, like, buying a Chanel bag is just, like, something fun to have.
Yeah. What is the whole thing? Like, rich talks, wealth whispers. It's,
yeah. Money talks, wealth whispers.
Money talks. Yes.
I mean, this whole cast is, like, very, like, it's the same with Mary Cosby. It's like, that closet is ridiculous. Like, anybody who, I feel like anybody who was, like, legitimately wealthy would be, like, horrified by the sight of that closet.
Yeah, I mean, at least with Mary, she's taking that money and she's buying some fucking houses. The fact that Jen does not
she's
own
buying like she's buying like a weird
property.
Suburban house in Florida.
And she's like, I don't know how many homes she has. Yeah, I mean, Erica and Tom was buying. I don't know how much Jen stole, I guess. I mean, yeah, how much she took, but where is it?
I don't know if there's, like, a solid number, but I think it was in the millions that they said, like, maybe single digit millions,
yeah.
I feel like is what I've heard, which is a lot of money, but at the same time, if you're, you know, filling a room with designer clothes, $5 million doesn't go as far as, you know, you're not buying multiple homes and cars and private planes with $5 million if you're also buying, like, you know, 25 handbags. And, you know, like, she's spending the money on, like, basic shit, basically. I don't know.
Yeah, I think a part of it, too, is that it's, like, this massive fraud scheme. So it's not just Jen. I mean, Jen is, like, in this fun little pyramid scheme. It's, like, Jen plus a million other people.
Right. Even if she's kind of, like, the orchestrator, and I'm sure she's pocketing a good chunk of the money, it's not just, like, 100% only going to her. Whereas, like, with Tom Girardi, it's like whatever money he stole, right, he was just like taking.
Right. Yeah, I don't, it's an interesting process, I guess I would say, to watch this unfold, because obviously the editors are not going to do her a single favor.
Oh, no.
And even in her confessionals, I'm wondering, some of these confessionals, I'm like, when she's talking about the Shaw Chalet being rented, so they're renting a new place, like, when was that confessional filmed?
So I would guess, I thought about this when I watched it before, they usually start doing some interviews pretty quickly into filming. Like, definitely, if they were filming for 2 months before she got indicted, I would say pretty confidently that they would start filming confessionals before that. So it would make sense to me that they, for the first few episodes of the season at least, they probably got her interviews done pre-arrest. Just based on, like, the sense I get of how the timeline usually works. Because they're, I think they do the confessionals more in real time than people might think.
And they also do a lot of pickups as they're editing, when there's like, here's a hole, there's some questions that I need to ask because I need you to fill in the narrative.
I mean, she for sure has been doing lots of confessionals since getting arrested. But like, when she's explaining, like, here's our new house, that I feel like was probably done a few weeks into filming.
I mean, it's just the narrative around this, the fact that we have this content of her describing the reunion, on the reunion, what she did, and none of us understood it, but I didn't think anything of it. I just thought, oh, this is something having to do with technology, so I'm going to zone out for a little bit, because
yeah,
I'm not going to understand marketing, like, in this way. I'm like, okay, she's saying words and stringing them together, and it doesn't make sense, and the money super doesn't add up, but if it has something to do with the internet, like, my brain went, like, okay.
As Lisa Barlow said, it's very lucrative.
That's like literally, I was like, all right, well, maybe I need to get into the internet, but maybe
not. And like, the Andy's just like, hey, oh, okay. It's very lucrative.
We're just taking her at her word, and we don't really need to know anything more about it, in the sense that, like, surely there are nuts and bolts that we don't get. But then Heather goes on watch. Oh, tell me.
I don't understand anyone's job. Like, I don't know what anyone does. Like,
right.
My title is content manager. That doesn't mean anything. Like,
my title is fun employed, and I know what that's all about. But then Heather goes on Watch What Happens, and Andy asks her a relatively innocuous question about, you know, like, something along the lines of, like, did you know the ins and outs of Jen's job? And Heather goes straight into a question that certainly surprised the fuck out of Andy, as well as most of us, and says, yeah, I knew it wasn't great. I knew it was unsavory. I knew that it was crossing the line into whether or not this may or may not be legal. I just decided to like her anyway. What?
The thing for me, I'm like nervous about Heather's whole thing this year, because it would be one thing if pre-arrest charges, indictment, all of that, if you were like, eh, like, her business sounds like kind of scammy, but like, it's whatever. It doesn't impact me. So like, I'm not going to be like, you know, like, I could see being like, yeah, whatever. Like, I don't really get what my friend does. Like, I don't know how legit it is, but whatever. But if you already had those thoughts and then she gets charged for fraud, why isn't your instinct to get as far away from that person as possible? Like, because I feel like there are some people who would be very like, you know, Lisa Rinna, where they're like, I don't think she knew any, like, I don't believe it. Like, that's my friend. I know her. I don't believe it. And as much as I think that's, like, a shitty, you know, way of thinking about it, I get it. Whereas, like, with Heather saying that, I'm like, then why are you, like, standing by her? Like, if you knew that it was bad before, and now you have this, like, sort of confirmation that it was, like, illegal, I don't think Heather's like, I don't believe the charges. I believe Jen's innocent. So it's like, why are you standing by her then?
I mean, if you knew all along that something was incredibly suspicious, obviously she didn't know the ins and outs, and probably the people that were affected by it, the victims of this. The simple fact that it wasn't a surprise is not a great response. Exactly, right. As you said, you would think the instinct would be separating, especially when they give you an out. When she gives you the out by treating you like shit multiple times, and you know all of this.
You know, Sarah, I love that friendship juice. Jen gives me the juice. She gives me the juice. I get drunk on the juice.
That was one of the best lines of the episode. That's not a juice. That's a choice. Like, Mary, I'm here for. I'm here for Mary's confessionals.
That's what I'm saying, that this season, we get to see Mary, like, actually having opinions on things and actually being present for these situations. And as much as I think Mary is, like, a nut job of a person and just completely, like, some screws are loose, you know, like, I don't know exactly what her deal is, I think she has, like, very valuable commentary on situations. And in that moment, I'm like, is Mary kind of a voice of reason in this cast? And I feel like I wouldn't say she's a voice of reason in terms of, like, how the world actually works. But I think in terms of having, like, less, she's, like, less biased than anyone else in the group, because she's like, well, I don't fuck with Jen, but also, like, she, like, doesn't know Heather that well, and, like, Lisa's annoying, and, like, you know, I feel like she just would kind of say exactly what she's feeling about anything, regardless of who it is. And so it's like, yeah, call Heather out, because that's, like, dumb. It's like, get over it.
Mary went on a Watch What Happens this weekend. An Instagram Live this weekend to promote the premiere episode, was given a completely innocuous question, like, very easy to answer, of what was your favorite outfit, least favorite. And her response in real time was, I truly don't care enough. I didn't like this season, so my outfits didn't matter. I mean, that is, like, legendary, because she doesn't get it. She doesn't want to get it. And she doesn't feel like she needs to play the game.
I literally was thinking she's never going to play the game, because I don't think she really knows that it is a game. The way where, like, you know, you see Whitney getting her boobs done before the reunion last season, and now she's, like, rebranding her skincare so it matches her, like, Wild Rose name thing. And, like, you know, Heather, God love her, is, like, shilling Beauty Lab any chance she gets. And, like, you know, Jen has the Sha Squad and, like, all of this stuff. And she's, like, you know, Justice for Jen on Instagram. Like, all of these women are working the hell out of this platform. And then you have Mary recording a podcast that would already be so niche. And then it's not even available to listen to anywhere. And it's like, oh, you truly don't care in a way that is, like, kind of very pure, but also, like, I don't think anything about Mary Cosby is pure. So I don't want to praise her, because I think she's, like, deep down not a good person, but it is a little bit refreshing to see somebody in 2021 with so little notion of, like, how to use this platform. And it's like, sometimes it's nice to just watch somebody in front of a camera not knowing what the deal is.
Yeah, and we're gonna get snippets into the season of talking about her church and all of the rumors around it, and a former parishioner or somebody meeting with Lisa Barlow to discuss it. And I'm curious how...
I cannot wait.
I mean, yeah, and I'm curious how if Jen is going to do justice for Jen, I'm curious how Mary is going to respond, if she's going to be, like, sympathy for me, or just total anger or frustration or what, because I don't think she's going to care enough or understand that she could use the platform of the show as a strategy to amplify her defense or denial.
Right, and I think I just, like, we don't really see anyone anymore who is not super aware of the game. You know, I feel like maybe a little bit Denise Richards was like that, where it was like everybody else on that show is like so strategic. And I think she was just kind of like, why is everyone like, why is, why is this happening? And it's like, you were like, you know, everybody else was like two steps ahead in the chess game and you were kind of just like hanging out. But
I mean, Denise at least caught up enough to know to send some cease and desist to get people to shut the fuck up on camera. I don't even think Mary would consider
that. I feel like Denise she is used to playing the game in like a larger celebrity sense, but I think she wasn't quite ready for the way it was going to come at her on the show. Whereas like Mary, I think, is just truly living in a bubble of, you know, faith, what's it called? Pentecostal. Rosemary Cosby and Jesus.
I mean, and look at what Erica's doing, where she's saying in something that's sort of a subversion of Denise's reaction response. Denise was like, we're not talking about this on camera. This person doesn't have anything to do with the show. And Erica's reaction is, I have everything to do with the show, but don't you dare discuss this on camera.
Yeah. I guess we probably only have a few episodes left of Beverly Hills. So I'm like, it's sad, but at the same time, I feel like I am ready to get to the reunion because I sort of feel like we know where everyone stands in terms of the show right now. And I'm really curious to see in the last, you know, 6 months, however long, what changes have happened. There have been like, you know, rumors and reports that Erica is like, not good with Kyle and Dorit right now because they haven't been supportive enough. And I'm curious to see at the reunion, like, if that seems to be the case or if it really is still, like, you know, Fox Force 5 bullshit happening. But, I still am enjoying the episodes a lot, but it's like, okay, so, like, we know that it's, you know, Sutton and Garcelle and whoever, and it's like the alliances have kind of been solidified. And so I'm curious to see. I'm like really looking forward to that reunion just because I feel like we need an update because, you know, so much has happened in real time.
Yeah. And just watching the journey begin with Salt Lake City, when it comes to selective silence or like cognitive dissonance or whatever you want to call it, it is fascinating to watch Meredith in real time and in confessionals try to hold Lisa accountable for refusing to acknowledge the reality of what Jen is doing with her son. And again, Heather goes and Watch What Happens is like, I would never, but it's the disconnect of, I would never be friends with somebody who talks about my child that way. And yet you are watching somebody talk about somebody else's child. So isn't this another warning bell that this person should, if they could say that about Brooks, what could they say about your kids? But regardless, the Lisa Meredith of it all is so interesting because Meredith is truly being pretty open with her anger about the fact that it's not even about our friendship that you're betraying my son.
Yeah. And I think like Meredith is being very clear that to start any kind of reconciliation, Jen must apologize to her family. And, you know, I love the way she says family. But Lisa, I think, is approaching it. You know, she says that she's not choosing Jen over Meredith, but it feels like Lisa is approaching this conversation at Shabbat like she's like an outside party serving as a mediator between these two women. And I think I understand in like a housewives context that it makes sense for her to kind of try and broker a peace deal here. But I think she is like missing the mark with Meredith a little, missing the marks with Meredith, because I think Meredith would be a lot more, I think she would be a lot more like amenable to what Lisa is saying if Lisa wasn't presenting it like, how quickly can I get you to forgive Jen? Because like, I think if Lisa was saying like, I'm 100% on your side. Like, what Jen did was really fucked up, and like all those comments and stuff. So like, if I got her to apologize to you, like, where do you think that would leave us? But I feel like she's approaching it like she's, you know, walking into like a negotiation, and she's like, okay, so I have Jen outside right now. If she says sorry, like, are we good? And Meredith needs a little more support. I think she needs a little stronger support from Lisa, because right now it's very like cut and dry. Lisa's trying to play the middle, and it's like there's a little bit more damage done there. And if you are really going to ride for Meredith, you need to make that a little more clear, because right now it feels a little murky.
Well, at the most basic level, Lisa is refusing to even acknowledge what Jen is continuing to do online. And because Jen isn't being held accountable by Lisa, she is able to double down. Like, to say to someone, for Meredith to say to Lisa, I have screenshots of what Jen is doing and I want you to see them. And for Lisa to say, I don't want to see them because I don't want to know the truth, which would make me being Switzerland all the more difficult. That is a shitty thing for a friend to not, you cannot be in the middle if you're unwilling to acknowledge, or mediate if you're unwilling to acknowledge how low this has gotten.
Right. And it's like she's trying to maintain this plausible deniability of not knowing the extent of what Jen has said. But it's like, you don't really have plausible deniability if Meredith herself is like, do you want to know how bad Jen is? And Lisa's like, no, like, I don't, like, turning down seeing the evidence doesn't mean that you don't know it exists. So it's like she already, to me, is past the point of pretending she doesn't know. Just because she hasn't seen the specific comments, she knows her friend Meredith, and Meredith would not be so adamant about this if there wasn't some bad shit in there. And, you know, I love, Meredith, like, definitely thinks twink is like a slur.
She did say it was homophobic.
She liked several homophobic posts about Brooks, including one that called him a twink, which is so funny, because it's like, I mean, like, yeah, it's like not, it's not like nice, the whole like sentiment, but it's like the word twink isn't actually homophobic. But I you know, I love Meredith. I am like, I liked Meredith a lot season one. I just am very into her vibe. I think she is like, I just think I love the energy she brings to this whole, you know, charade of being a housewife. But I think already in season two, I'm like, oh, I feel like you're really dialed in. I like that stuff with Seth seems better. So she is maybe like a little more present with the women in the group. But yeah, I feel like Meredith, especially knowing that she is going to be less Team Jen post-arrest, I see her having a really strong season. Because I think she just like has a backbone, which is nice to see sometimes.
Totally. And I think with the Brooke stuff, I mean, for her to say, which is something that I truly hadn't considered prior, that it's Brooks hasn't come out. He hasn't discussed with her truly his sexuality in any way. So for Jen to say these things, which are supposed to be diminishing, which to Meredith and maybe to Brooks, that maybe that's the when she's saying that these things are homophobic, that's how she's feeling about the impact of how they've landed for Brooks, someone who hasn't privately to her come out nor really had an intense or in-depth discussion about his sexuality, for Jen to go that extra step, maybe knowing that and saying these things about someone's child who hasn't come out to his family, if that is what he decides to do, that is like incredibly shitty.
Well, I mean, going back to last season, when Brooks allegedly saw her vagina. In that clip, they show she's like, grinder. Like, she's trying to make him uncomfortable. And then, like, in the interview clip they show where she's, like, joking about him never seeing a vagina, it's, like, all of that stuff, it's just, like, so unnecessary. And if you're claiming to have any interest in being friends with Meredith, it's, like, cut it out. Like, what do you think you're doing? What are you trying to do? Like, what is the point? Because Jen, there is no way Jen doesn't know that that's going to bother Meredith. And so if what you're saying is you want Meredith to like you again, or you want, you know, to get back in Meredith's good graces, it's like, okay, well, the first step is that you need to fucking stop it. Like, what do you think is going to happen?
Yeah, and there's the defense of saying, well, Jen felt uncomfortable about what he said, but I mean, like, as someone who has certain bodily, you know, parts and pieces, I mean, did she not have underwear on? Like, did he literally see her vagina when she was throwing her legs back? Like, it is possible. That would make me very uncomfortable if my mom's friend was over, wasn't wearing underwear, and was throwing her legs in the air, not so anybody could see something, but that is what happened. Yeah, I would be uncomfortable and a little freaked out and leave shortly thereafter. I don't think he was body shaming her in any way. I get if other people have a different reaction. I saw other accounts posting about it. And they have every right to say that. I was just like, I thought it was weird if she wasn't wearing underwear. Like, this is a different experience than like Pantygate. This is her throwing her legs in the air. I'm not body shaming her at all. I'm just saying, like, there is someone's child in the room and you're doing this like circus act to perform in the moment, not meaning to do this. But if it happened, it doesn't mean this person hates women or is making fun of your body. They're just acknowledging what took place and how fucking uncomfortable it was.
Like, asking somebody to like kindly put their genitals away is not body shaming,
right?
You know what?
I don't want to see
you know
that.
What is body shame?
I'm sorry, I don't want to.
You know what
it.
Is
tell
body
me.
Shaming? Body calling shame. Somebody wide, everything calling somebody just wide-bodied 3 times in a row. You came in with your wide-bodied ass.
Listen, I haven't seen the Potomac after show, but I saw some headline of it, which is Candace said, like, I like to diversify my insults. It wasn't body shaming. I think it's this very special kind of horrible asshole behavior. And I got into this in depth on the last AG. But for Candace to say, I apologize for body shaming, but just so you know, I wasn't body shaming you. And when I talk about your wide body, it has nothing to do with the fact that I thought your body was wide, is the most ludicrous, insulting, non-apology gaslight that Candace could deliver. And that's a long
list. It's
like
the least convincing form of gaslighting someone when you're like, it's like 2 minutes later and it's like, no, like, well, it's one of those things where like, I feel like we are more aware now than ever that like sometimes the intent of what you were saying matters less mm-hmm. than the impact. And like, so in that sense, it's like whether Candace intended to body shame, clearly the comment was delivered in a way that felt body shamey, but then it's like, I feel like even that is giving her too much credit because it's like the intent of the comment was to body shame. Like,
was her body even shame. If, right. The intent and the impact are the same in this.
And it's like, even if Candace just thought it was something funny to say and she doesn't really, you know, think that Ashley has a terrible body or whatever, the comment itself was body shaming. Like, I feel like we can confidently say that remarking on somebody's body in that manner is body shaming. And so it's like, it was like frustrating because like Candace has had such a good first half of the season. You know, I thought the way she handled Ashley in Williamsburg was like really great because it was kind of like calling her out properly in a way that was like, yeah, like you're actually the one making sense right now and Ashley is the one who looks messy. But at this party, it's just like, Candace just can't keep it together. And the way, I don't know, her whole dynamic with Chris right now is just like a little hard to watch.
I mean, she's being disingenuous. She's being disingenuous in that half-assed apology that she doesn't even believe, but she refuses. It would have been so easy for anybody else in that moment to be like, you know what? I shouldn't have said it and I'm sorry. But she can't even go that far. It's like narcissism and broken bird syndrome and everything else. And also the fact that she takes delight in doing it and she doesn't want to admit that it's bad because that might mean that she might have to change her behavior and the thing that she likes to do to make someone feel bad might no longer be a viable option or publicly available for her to do. And from, I haven't seen the after show yet, but it seems likely that she doubles down on this and it's just gross. She knows what it is. She knows enough to call it body shaming. She gets that what she's doing is shaming someone's body and in doing so, fat shaming. She's saying wide body as an insult. A wide body is not good and I'm going to make fun of you for it. And I'm going to make fun of you for it also because I know that you're a new mom and the fact that you gained weight because of giving birth to a child, you need to be punished for that. I want you to feel bad about the way that you look. And the fact that she won't change that behavior is one of the grossest aspects on a pretty long list of the ways that she weaponizes other people's not weaknesses. It's not a weakness.
Like but vulnerabilities. The thing that she
vulnerabilities, the way that a woman thinks of a person, thinks of themselves and thinks of their body, which is so closely associated with most people's identities and the paths that we go on in life. And she wants you to feel bad about the body that holds you together, your identity as a person, the weight of your skin. She wants you to feel bad about it. She's going to double down. She's going to make it into a joke on the after show. And I guarantee you on the fucking reunion, she's going to talk about how she's great with words. She says it on social. She doesn't care about the damage that she does because she's going to say that Ashley has done bad stuff too. And it just shows you what a piece of shit Candace can be if she tries enough. And the thing is, it's effortless. I don't know what else to say about it, aside from the fact that it's never going to end. So we can continue talking about it and calling it out, or we can just continue talking about it and calling it out because it's like an important discussion. But also acknowledge the fact that she has no interest in being held accountable and she'll weaponize you for trying it.
What did you think of at Mia's goddess party?
Loved it. Love the sandwiches, by the way, which is such a wild food choice at a goddess party to do a big fucking ciabatta sandwich on a fucking baguette. But yeah, continue.
What did you think about this sort of truce, maybe apology moment between Karen and Giselle? Because I felt like it almost felt like a little bit out of nowhere that like Giselle did get like a little more open about, you know, she said that she knew about the Jamal cheating stuff prior to the reunion and that it really did hurt her and her daughters. But like, it felt like Karen switched so quickly from being like, well, you brought a fake relationship to the show and like, blah, 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 blah. And like, you now, like, I don't have any words for you. And then like, all of a sudden, it was almost like somebody like tapped her on the shoulder and was like, okay, go. And she's like, but if I hurt your daughters, I apologize for that. I don't know. I want Karen and Giselle to get back to the place of like being like frenemies who can kind of playfully go at each other.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
yeah,
this feels a little weird to me and like, it's not, it doesn't feel like there's like real resolution happening here.
I don't know if we're ever going to get real resolution because I don't know that either of these women are interested in it. And I think that the surface was like the goal. And I think it also was an environmental impact of the fact that they were in flowy Grecian goddess outfits at a ladies' lunch. And it probably didn't feel, the vibe in the air was maybe one where if I don't move toward resolution, I'm going to look bad. I do think there's something to say for Giselle saying my daughters were hurt. And you counter that with like, or not counter, you compare it with Karen saying my kids were hurt. And like one of these, I believe one of these, I don't.
Raven does not give a fuck.
Raven doesn't care. She doesn't care. I'm sure Ray doesn't care. It matters that Karen cares. But I think it really matters that Giselle's high school or junior high age children were hurt by this. And, you know, you can argue, well, Jamal maybe shouldn't be cheating on their mom and like having, you know, church babies or whatever. Talk about giving a sacrament or whatever that's called. Something was exchanged. You know, you can, and apologies to all the religious AGs listening, but it's humor. You can talk about, you know, who's really to blame for that. But of course, Karen's making this into a joke on camera to punish their mom. I think that, of course, I'm sure that had an effect.
So like you were saying, I believe that Giselle's girls were much more impacted than Karen's kids. But I also think it's sometimes because we're analyzing like what these women are saying now, we lose sight of the fact that Karen's whole issue with Giselle about this is based on like a bad faith recollection of what she said, which is not actually what she said. Right. That it's like Karen's whole insistence that Giselle wished death upon Ray is literally not something that happened. Like, and that's frustrated me this whole time because it's like, obviously, like on these shows, you know, there are like people take things the wrong way and there are like misunderstandings, and that's part of it. And that's like, you know, makes for great TV. But it's like, Karen, enough. Like, at a certain point, it's like, that's not what Giselle said. Everybody knows that's not what Giselle said. And so to watch it like carrying on, it's like, I love Karen, but it's like, I can't like bring it. I can't find it within me to, as messy as Giselle is, I'm like, I don't, Karen doesn't have a leg to stand on in this argument, I think, because it's like, that's not what she, like, you're holding over her an apology for something that she literally did not say.
There are some, I'm trying to think in my head, some examples of like somebody weaponizing friendship in a way where they're pissed and they want to be pissed and they start to believe it. Like, I truly think Karen believes that Giselle said this, and she may or may not remember the 5 or 7 times that Giselle has apologized since. So when Karen says, I just want one apology, she means like one in addition to the previous 6. I'm trying to think of some examples. Like, in my head, I'm thinking of 2. One, Teresa, with the Jacqueline stuff and camp, where it's like you are discussing the thing that everybody in the country is talking about with the allegations of fraud or whatever, and twisting that into her really believing that Jacqueline is a bad friend. And for some reason, I'm thinking about Jill, and please tell me to shut the fuck up because this could be entirely wrong, but it just feels like the energy is similar with like Jill and Bethany, when Jill's saying like, you didn't even support me when Bobby had cancer, and Bethany's response was like, you never told me. But Jill believes so strongly that her friend is not being supportive, she's forgotten that she didn't tell her friend that thing that could enable that friend to show support. Like, there is a little piece of a, I'm pissed and I'm upset. And
there's, I just watched the Vanderpump Rules premiere for the new season. And it's
did you?
It's very like that same sort of situation happens with Sheena and Lala, which I think they've talked about publicly, where it's like when Sheena had a miscarriage, their issue arose because Sheena was like, Lala wasn't there for me. And Lala was like, you said you were fine. I'm not a mind reader. And Sheena's like, you should have been there. And Lala's like, I asked if you wanted me to come and you said no. Like, so it's like that kind of thing where like that definitely happens. And I think that is more understandable to me. But in this situation, it's just like, can someone like roll the footage for Karen of what Giselle actually said 4 years ago? Because like, maybe it wasn't the nicest comment ever, but it's truly just like was not that deep. And, you know, I think Giselle has, you know, kind of made some poor decisions this season too. But it's like, We've gotta find something else. You know, it's just, it's frustrating. And like, I want them to fight about something else. Like, I don't necessarily want them to make up and be friends forever, but it's like, find something different, find something new.
Do you think, what do you think is going to happen? I know this is like maybe too far ahead, but on the reunion or in the rest of the season, because they've both doubled down on just despising, wanting to reflect despising each other on social and in media interviews recently.
I think it might depend a lot on what happens with Giselle and Wendy in the next few weeks, because I think that has become, you know, now that Karen and Giselle seem to be like, you know, maybe, you know, at a stalemate, as Ashley said, I guess, like, I think the sort of most active volcano within the group is how Wendy feels about Giselle, because even when you see when Giselle is showing up at the goddess party, Wendy looks like she would love to like drop kick Giselle into the water. And it's like, I feel like that dynamic has been like a little bit on the back burner for the last couple episodes, but I think there's like another wave coming. And even like when Robin is like complimenting Wendy on how she, you know, cares for her family, and Wendy is like twisting that into like, if you think I have a lovely family, then how could you possibly be friends with Giselle, who, you know, is attacking my family? And I think that's something where like Wendy is really not, she's not over it, and it's not even like simmered down yet. I think it's like bubbling right under the surface, and I think that's going to come out. And I think Karen is probably not going to agree with how Giselle handles that. And I think that's that seems like the logical way that they're going to kind of end up fighting again.
I completely agree. And I also think when it comes to intent and impact, you know, Giselle's defense is, I wasn't actively trying to harm your family, so you need to like chill. And Wendy's response is, you may not. Okay, well, I'm going to hear you on the intent, but the impact is still the same. That talking about this on camera and using it as a plot point and weaponizing the choices that I've made about adjustments or how I want to change my body, doing that all together through the lens of like, because there are rumors about my husband, are going to damage me regardless of whether or not you actually believed it.
I don't think it was a direct attack, but it was a form of messiness that caused harm. And like, I think Giselle is undeniably like a great housewives character. Like, I think she's brought us so much over the years, but I think maybe this season more than in the past, it's a little bit like you need to like reel it in 25% of the time, because like, I think it's just, it's a tough look to always be the one that's like causing problems and kind of like, you know, pouring gasoline on the fire and then like trying to run away. It's like, sooner or later, that's going to bite you in the ass. And I think, you know, it seems like from the vibes I get on social media and stuff, like people are kind of less team Giselle than they've been in the past, maybe because it's so apparent, kind of her tactics. But I don't know. I still like Giselle a lot as like a housewives figure, but I definitely am kind of like, it's a lot.
I'm so appreciative of Giselle as a housewife. I think she's also so fucking funny and smart.
She is
on other projects. Yeah. It's the same thing over and over again. But I still love her. I love her as a housewife, even if I disagree with what she's doing. It does just so happen that she does this one thing. She does it very well, but we've come to almost expect it a little bit. It's a little tired, but I still love her. I really genuinely think she's an amazing housewife.
And I think this season, because of the stuff that happened with Jamal, it's been more so she's always kind of gotten away with not talking a lot about her personal life. It's like she's showed us like Sherman and whoever that she's like sort of dating. But it's never, the main storyline of the season has never really been her issues. And I think this season, knowing that she had this relationship with Jamal that went wrong and that he cheated on her, it's like, can we talk about that more? Like, I'd like to revisit that. And I think the women in the cast feel the same way. And that it's like, in the past, maybe she didn't have that much going on in her personal life, but this year it's like, no, that should be a focus. Like, I would like to know more. And so, you know, her not talking about herself feels a little bit more like a glaring omission versus just like a there wasn't that much going on to talk about.
Completely agree. And also, so, you know, Candace brings to light, which was a good point, you know, Giselle never discusses when something hurts her feelings. Her guard is always up. So the fact that she was vulnerable was significant, which I agree with. I also, I don't mean this in any kind of shady way. I genuinely am, I find myself very confused about the number of times that Jamal has stepped out and the number of children that have maybe he has fathered while in a relationship with Giselle during their marriage or since. So her admitting that she knew he cheated on her was from the most recent, from the past 2 years, right?
Yeah, I mean...
And is that... did the child result from that?
I don't think we know about the child situation. Like, I honestly have, like...
Got it.
I've divested from keeping up with Jamal. Yeah.
Yes, amen. Because
it's like...
Amen,
I mean, it's a bottomless pit of trash, you know, like, potential children, potential mistresses, you know, in which state he was, where and when. Like, to be honest, I don't really give a shit. Like... I feel like I get very invested in, like, things as it pertains to Housewives, but, like, at this point, for watching Potomac, it's like, I don't need to know how many kids just Jamal has, like...
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm focused on, like, the damage he's left behind. And so I think for Karen to acknowledge that there was pain caused because it was always, it felt like such a gleeful thing for her to be, you know, dragging Giselle's relationship with Jamal. And so I think for her to just acknowledge that maybe there was pain, even if she's saying it in kind of like a, if there was, I don't know, like maybe somebody was hurt, you know, I think that is a step in the right direction because in the past, it's always been like a Giselle can't keep a man. Like, so just for the tone to shift a little bit in how she's talking about that, I think is, you know, meaningful. But we'll see. I don't think that means she's like never going to make a comment about Jamal again.
100%. And speaking of all things potential reunion related. So Beverly Hills was filmed this weekend. Yes. And apparently it ran long. But after the fact, you know, Andy posted some IG stories and Erica was in the background being like, the reunion is so good. It's so good. To which I got a little concerned because if Erica thinks it's good, I don't know how I'm going to feel about the content. What are your thoughts about what you're expecting? I know we talked about this a little, but I'm just curious for a little bit more.
I would say I am. Sorry, a little. Get a little choked up. I feel like with reunions these days, when they're happening in real time, I like always try to keep my expectations pretty mediocre because I just feel like, I don't know if it's like necessarily an Andy problem. I think it certainly might be. I don't.
Your voice right now.
I don't feel. Like, I don't feel like Bravo reunions necessarily, like, go hard the way they used to. And I think when they do, it's often because, like, one or two members of the cast have really, like, committed to bringing it. Like, so I don't feel like, I don't know, like, I have very little faith in Andy, I'll just say, to, like, give us what we want, holding Erica's feet to the fire. So, like, I am hopeful that the women really are, like, in it to win it. And I think, like, Sutton has an excellent opportunity to give us some, like, unforgettable moments. I would love to see, like, some pressure applied to Lisa Rinna in a way that maybe hasn't been before. I think there is potential for, like, a really stellar reunion. But at the same time, I'm kind of like, we'll see. I'm not counting on it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I also feel like there was a moment, was it a moment in this Instagram live that was done in two parts with the cast of Potomac and individual Housewives from other franchises, Salt Lake and Beverly Hills, where
Crystal said in response to a question of, you know, which housewife are you currently closest to? Am I pulling this out of my ass?
I didn't. I only watched Jen and Giselle's portion.
Oh, okay. Which was extraordinary. Giselle was honestly extraordinary. It was like chef's kiss. Magnificent. And shout out PS to Donald from Bravo Social, who did a phenomenal job. We love Donald. But when it came to Crystal's response, I think her response was like something along the lines of like, I can't tell you that answer because who I'm closest to now, because it would give too much away. It'll be revealed on the reunion. I assume that that means that her answer would be Sutton. But I don't know if that's right.
As you were saying that, that's what I was thinking. I mean, I think we had Crystal on my podcast mention it all. Go check it out. Mm-hmm. Like a few weeks ago, maybe like a month ago at this point. And we got into the Sutton stuff a little bit because I felt like when I was watching it, Harry's bolognese lunch, ugly leather pants day, was obviously like sort of the, you know, the peak of, you know, Sutton and Crystal's drama with each other. And then pretty quickly after that, that was when they took the 4-week break from filming because of the positive COVID tests. And then right after that, they went to La Quinta. And if you recall, when they were in La Quinta, Sutton and Crystal like didn't have issues. It was very much the focus had shifted. You know, there wasn't really even tension between them. It's not just like we have bigger fish to fry. It's like they're not fighting anymore. So I asked her about that, and she was like, she said that after the ugly leather pants thing, and when they had the shutdown, they basically like called each other and had a long conversation and pretty much agreed, like, okay, like we're not gonna bring it up anymore when we're filming, and like when we say that, we really mean it. Like, it's not gonna happen. And that since then they really were like working on building a relationship with each other. And it seems like that actually has stuck. Like, I don't know if they are like besties or anything, but like I feel like Sutton and Crystal have genuinely put their issues behind them in a way that like we don't see very often, because usually there's some like pettiness lingering or, you know, resentment, but I feel like they were able to actually like put that issue to rest and like really start from square one in a way that's kind of refreshing.
Yeah, I think that's amazing. I do wonder, you know, now they're back filming, the pause is done, the dinner from hell part deux. Still Helen has taken place, and Crystal was very expressively supportive of Erica's response to Sutton in a way that made me think, you know, it's this whole thing of like forgive and forget. People always think that forgetting is possible, and it's literally not. So I wonder how much of her defense of Erica was based on the information that she knew at the time, but also a little bit of a window into the, you know, Sutton was asking for it, and I know from her behavior in the past that X, Y, and Z, she's done certain things that have pissed me off, so I'm going to join this train.
I think there might also be an element of, you know, Crystal really didn't know any of these women aside from Kathy before she started filming, which at this point is like, you know, 3 months ago with a month where they weren't filming. So I feel like she maybe is still in a little bit of a place of like, none of these women have done anything to me. So like, I'm going to kind of give everyone equal opportunity, shot at friendship type of thing. And I feel like Crystal is sort of that type of person where it's like, I mean, that sound like whatever Tom had going on sounded bad, but like, I don't have any reason to dislike Erica. And I think maybe Sutton, I think they have been working on their relationship, but like Sutton is kind of the only person in this cast who has had an issue with Crystal directly. So like, it wouldn't shock me if more than anything, Crystal is just kind of like, I don't know. Erica has been nice to me. So, like, I don't have a reason to, like, drag her.
Yeah, I think it's sort of what Lisa Rinna is trying to do, but at a much different percentage.
Right.
Like, the idea of, like, we really don't know. We don't know what's going on. I only know so much information at the time of filming, and also Sutton's the only person that I've had conflict with. So put all of those pieces together, and this is the result.
Like, Crystal's relationships with the group are much less loaded than anyone else's, because there's just less history, yes. There's less baggage. Whereas... I mean, honestly, with Lisa Rinna, it's kind of strange to think about the fact that Sutton came on the show as Lisa's friend. So it's like, I mean, obviously Lisa and Erica have their history together, but theoretically, Sutton and Lisa also have history together. And like, I don't know how close they were before Sutton joined the show in reality, but like, at least on paper, we're supposed to think that they have been friends for a while. So it's like, I don't know. I think Lisa Rinna looks awful this season. I just like, it's really a tough look for her. And I still don't think it's like clicked for her, because maybe she's in a bubble where it doesn't really matter. But like, I really am so curious, obviously, to see the reunion. But then, like, looking ahead to next season, it's like, I don't know. It's like, Lisa Rinna is one of those people where it's like, I won't believe that they would get rid of her until they do. Like, it's similar with Ramona. It's like, mm-hmm. when everybody's mm-hmm. like, there's no way Ramona's not getting fired after this season. I'm like, we'll see. I'm not counting any.
There's a big
right.
way.
And I feel like Rinna is kind of in that category too, where it's like, I feel like she's like a little bit. She's been a little bit untouchable, and like, I think mm-hmm. she, I mean, at this point, aside from Kyle, like, she's the veteran in the cast. Like, I think it would be a tall order for them to get rid of her, but also I wouldn't be that mad about it at this point, just because I think she's like, so, I think she's just like a little bit past her point of expiration on Housewives. I don't know.
I mean, I wanted to keep her on the show to see someone bring her back down to earth. And the reality is, she might think that that doesn't matter. I think that Garcelle's doing a pretty good job of it, but there needs to be a little bit. I would like to see, which might be the same as there needs to be, a little bit of a sea change with Rinna, because I feel like she's gotten away with so much, and just her behavior this season. Just, I don't know why this annoys me so much, but her pretending she was too drunk to understand what was happening with Erica is such a wild and obvious lie. And I just think there needs to be some sort of counter. And I don't know, like, a big counter, a big shift. And it's not going to happen this season. And she's just going to go into that reunion fucking cackling, being like, oh, bitches, I told you, and I'm going to support my friend, and now I'm listening, so now I'm going to bring up the stuff that Garcelle said and the fact that I still don't believe what her intention is, and yes, I'm supporting my friend because we will never know, and blah, 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 and it's just going to be the same shit, just add an 11.
She's just so entrenched in a place of being so pleased with herself, and just thinking she's like the cat's meow. And like, mm-hmm. I don't think, like, anyone who has something negative to say to her is a hater. And mm-hmm. I don't, and like, she has this idea of that she's like, I'm a good fucking friend. And that's like how she's thinking of this Erica situation. And that questioning her would mean she's a bad friend. But for some reason in her brain, that doesn't compute with any of her other friendships on this show. That it's like, okay, so like, you think you, like, I'm a good fucking friend, but like, she still doesn't get it with Garcelle. I can't imagine Sutton feels like Lisa's been a great friend to her this season. Like, everybody Amen. Else in the cast, it's like, okay, so like, you apply this logic of being a good, loyal friend so selectively that it's like, I don't ever remember Lisa being like up Erica's ass before this season. I know they were like friendly, but it's like, it's just weird. And it's not, mm-hmm. it's just not cute. And like, I don't know.
Yeah. She's less a friend and more a consigliere.
Right. She's like, it's,
shout out to my Italian heritage.
Right. It literally feels like she is like, it feels like for some reason she has these like blinders on and it's like, you look stupid watching the show. It's like, you mm-hmm. look like you are so, you know, you've drank so much of the friendship juice that you can't take your head out of the sand and like see what's happening in the real world. And like, Kyle was a little bit like that too, but it seems like she at least understands kind of the severity of what's happening and the complexity of what's happening and why, you know, maybe she wants to believe Erica didn't know anything, but I think she at least has an inkling of like, we don't really know.
In the words of Mary Cosby, it's not a juice, it's a choice. And there we go on Lisa Rinna. She's making an active one, and I don't think anyone is expecting anything less than her just continuing this dumb fucking bullshit. It's so stupid. And it's like literally stupid to me. It feels like a moronic, idiotic choice, and she's a smart woman. So I know she's actively doing
and
this.
I'm like picturing her at the reunion being like, Andy, I like, okay. Like I had to stand by my friend Erica. And when everybody was coming for her, was I just going to leave her alone? No, like because I'm a good friend. And it's just like, I'm so unimpressed by the like,
laziness.
The charade of loyalty in some of these situations. Mm. It's like, you're on Real Housewives together. Like, if you've been on these shows for more than a couple years, chances are we've seen you make some questionable decisions when it comes to friendship and loyalty and like treating people, mm-hmm. you know, the proper way. So it's like, I just feel like for somebody who has as much like Housewives carnage in the past as Lisa Rinna to like suddenly decide that it's like life or death for her to be loyal to Erica Girardi, it's like, that's not actually like how you are as a person. It's just how you've decided you need to be in this situation, and it doesn't, it's like not working, I think, the way that she envisioned it.
And yet Erica is thrilled. It's like they can be disingenuous buddies forever.
Well, that's, yeah, I mean, thank God for Erica at least having one, you know, strong ally in the cast. I think, you know, it probably makes it a little more, you know, balanced to watch. But I think whether or not Erica knew that people were going to be so critical of her while the show was airing, she obviously was there during filming and was, you know, sitting through all of these, you know, dinners and stuff where she's getting questioned. And I'm sure she's like, yeah, thank God I have Rinna here, because nobody else is like, you know, carrying the flag for me as much as I would have hoped. So I don't know. The reunion, I feel like I'm like anxious about, but I'm hoping it's at least very entertaining, even if it's not 100% satisfying.
And I'm 100% going to force you, our friendship contract, I'm forcing you to come back to discuss. And I hope it's 17 parts long. Okay. I want the B-roll. I want the live footage. I want Big Brother, Beverly Hills reunion.
I'm assuming.
It's like literally my one
dream. I think Winter House is on Wednesdays starting like October 20th. So I'm assuming that the Beverly Hills reunion will be wrapping up, you know, around that time. So.
God. Oh, no. Things to not look forward to. I don't want to wrap up. But speaking of wrapping up, Dylan Hafer.
Speaking of wrapping up.
This has been a delightful.
Speaking of wrapping up, I have to pee.
Literally and figuratively. Dylan Hafer, tell the people where to listen to your pods and follow your content online and all of that good stuff.
Yes, of course. I would be happy to. You can listen to me and my co-host Barry recap all the Bravo shows, all the breaking Bravo news on Mention It All. We do 3 episodes a week. Right now that's Mondays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays, wherever you listen to podcasts. And then you can listen to my pop culture news show, Pop Alarm. Super short, 5-minute little digestible episodes, 5 days a week. Also wherever you listen. And then you can follow me on Instagram at Dylan Hafer, and for all the Bravo content at Bravo by Betches. Too many places, but
oh my God, so many places, and all of them All of them are sublime. Guys, patreon.com, the number one way to support yours truly and Andy's girls. You get exclusive bonus episodes. I do Zoom Kikis and so much more. Starts at $2 a month for your my love and sass back to you. $5 a month gets you 2 episodes. $10 a month gets you 4 and invites to special events. And you can even do the premium tier and record a Patreon episode with yours truly. That'll be me at patreon.com/Andy's Girls and follow me on Instagram at Dame Galley. I have an exciting announcement that I think is coming out this week. So that is actually going to be announced on Instagram first. So follow me on IG at Dame Galley for that, which I think you're going to enjoy. And so much more. Dylan Hafer, thank you so much for coming back on AG.
Love, love, love.
Love, love, love.
You know what? Tell me. What, Sarah, I loved this. Oh, I loved this. It was so fun.
Oh my God. Love this too. Shout love and light to Lisa Barlow and nobody else. Guys, I hope you are feeling safe and sane, getting the vax if you can, and we will talk to you soon. Bye-bye.